All right, hey guys, welcome to the legislative updates for Every Second Matters, October 2017. I'm doing this a little bit differently. If you're not aware of Every Second Matters, it is an awareness campaign started a few years back by a handful of people. It's been growing grassroots ever since. Basically, everyone gets together on the second of every month and talks about Second Amendment issues, what they've done, what they can do. There's been special guests joined in from state rights organizations or different lobbying groups and all sorts of different stuff. And one of the segments that we've done in the past that I like to do is a summary of everything that's happened as far as state laws and sometimes even federal laws over the past month. So today I'm just going to do that by myself here, real quick. There's not a lot going on for the last month. And the idea here is that if someone else is doing a live chat and wants to use this video, go ahead and play this video and, pause it and comment and do whatever you want with it. I'm just trying to get the information out there. And anyways, I'm just going to jump right into it then. So the first thing I have here, actually, let me go backwards. I'll start at the beginning of September and then end at the end of September. So the first thing from September 6th, in California, anti-gun bills are heading to the governor's desk. Oh, gee, what a surprise. So let's see, on September 5th, the Senate concurred on an assembly amendment to Senate Bill 464, blah, blah, blah. What the heck is okay? Sorry. The Senate Bill 464 would further increase the mandatory storage and security requirements for licensed firearm dealers. California already has some of the strictest laws in the country regarding how dealers must store their firearms. Okay, so that basically is just going to add cost and hassle and, possibly get in trouble if your gun's locked up three times, but it was supposed to be locked up four times, and you're a licensed dealer. So it doesn't have to do with people. It has to do with stores or FFLs. They could be running from their house or whatever, but that just seems like extra stuff. And I didn't see a thing saying it was signed already, so the fact that it was passed September 5th and I still haven't seen something that said it was signed. Maybe the governor's sitting on it, but you know how California is. So anyways, that's just a quick one. The next one in Michigan. Oh, gee. What a good state. Everyone loves Michigan, right? Anyways, legislation for concealed carry is moving to the Senate. This is September 6th as well. Now, Michigan was a little weird with their concealed carry thing. It's actually a group of four bills. So it is House Bill 4416, 4417, 4418, and 4419. Basically, I think just the way the laws are written, it mentions CPL, concealed pistol license, in multiple areas of different laws, and so it goes in and replaces that requirement. So anyways, it passed the House and is now moving over to the Senate, and basically it's been sitting in the Senate since then. So hopefully Michigan will get constitutional carry. But that's something, if you're in Michigan, one of the great states, write your senators and say, hey, you guys should vote on this thing. I already have. I actually got a response back, and the guy was like, blah, blah, blah. I support the Second Amendment, but I think people need to have requirements to carry or whatever. And I was like, well, that's a bunch of crap. I sent him a reply back. I'm not sure. I didn't get anything after that. But I was like, hey, I think your reasoning's a little flawed, but whatever. So, next one is actually also from Michigan. Bill introduced to protect Second Amendment rights of foster parents. I remember talking about this when it came out. It's a Senate Bill 527. And basically, it guarantees the law-abiding citizen will not be stripped of their Second Amendment rights when they choose to provide foster care for children. And what I remember in the past talking about, there was a case of, I think it was a grandfather or some other family member wanted to foster a kid, but because they had firearms in the house, it was either you can either take care of your grandson or you can have firearms. You can't do both. And I think personally that's completely ridiculous, because if that person was their parent, they'd be allowed to have firearms in the same house as the kid. But because they're a foster parent, there's more restrictions they have to go through. Now, I understand the point of the foster care system wants to protect the children and, you know, make sure that they're going into a safe environment, all that stuff. However, I don't think that a law-abiding adult who owns a firearm creates an unsafe environment. And I would almost even go on a limb and say there could be storage requirement laws for foster parents. Someone did bring up the fact that a lot of times kids coming through the system may be extra susceptible to, you know, having some problems. You know, they probably didn't have a great life, you know, in general, right? I mean, obviously everyone's different, but so I don't know. I don't know exactly how I feel about that. I'd prefer to say don't tell parents what to do. And most logical people, if they have troubled children or they have young children or whatever, then they lock the guns up. But under the foster care thing, it has to be completely unloaded and locked up, and the ammo has to be locked up in a separate location, all that stuff. All the things that would make it really, really hard that if someone was breaking into the house and trying to harm that child, how would the parent be able to defend that child? I look at it as a safety risk of not having a readily available loaded firearm for protection. All right, so moving on to the next one. This is as of September 7th, going back to California. Lawsuit filed against recently enacted assault weapons regulation. I think we've talked about this as well. Basically, it's from the whole Gunmageddon thing. I think this particular one they're talking about has to do with the actual assault weapon regulation, you know, the bullet button, whatever, which that's crazy. You guys already all know that. So anyways, that was, where is it? So that was filed by the National Rifle Association and the California Rifle and Pistol Association. And it is a third, the third lawsuit in a series of planned lawsuits that will challenge California's, you know, massive restrictions that went through last year in 2016. And some of them took effect this year, and some of them got pushed back further out because, you know, the Department of Justice still didn't have their stuff together as far as definitions and getting the system. Even if you wanted to register, they didn't have the system available too. And anyway, so we will obviously keep an eye on that. But I think out of all the things, like the lawsuits tend to move the slowest. You think it takes a long time to pass a law, when we talk about something gets introduced at the beginning of the year and it's the end of the year and it's still in committee or something, everyone gets frustrated. I understand that. Lawsuits tend to take even longer than that. So we'll see what happens. We'll obviously keep an eye on it. This one's going over to Arizona, September 8th. Tucson repeals ordinance requiring destruction of firearms. So I'm not 100% sure what the destruction ordinance was, if it was destroying, you know, guns that were recovered in a crime, or if they had a buyback program that then they ordered them to be destroyed, things like that. But basically, a recent state Supreme Court ruling struck down the city's firearm destruction policy as a violation of state law that prohibits local governments from regulating the ownership, license, or use of firearms. So Arizona has a preemption law where the city cannot be more strict than the state. And so the city of Tucson ignored state law for 12 years, and recently they changed their policy or changed their ordinance. So now they no longer have to destroy firearms. So that's a good thing, and it's a good reminder too that, you know, everyone thinks Arizona's awesome, which it basically is, but there are still some pockets of not great gun laws. So you still have to fight for even that kind of stuff. And people might say, oh, that's silly. It just, you know, Well, they destroy guns or whatever. It's just a city, but that stuff's important too, and that does, still kind of affect your rights. It's good to see that that went away. So jumping up to September 19th, Wisconsin constitutional carry passes committee vote. So Senate Bill 169 passes the Senate Judiciary Committee, which would allow concealed carry of a firearm without a license. So a lot of different states doing the constitutional carry thing. We have, I think, 13 of them, it's possibly 12, that have constitutional carry. Some of them have had them for years, some of them got them recently, and we're not seeing spikes in violence, we're not seeing spikes in crime, we're not seeing spikes of accidents, all the things that the anti-gunners claimed would happen if you allowed people to carry guns without a permit. So I think the more and more states that get that, the easier the case is for the other states who don't have it yet to say, look, there's this other, dozen states that have constitutional carry, and all the bad stuff you say is going to happen isn't happening there. So why would it happen here? I believe recently someone said that it actually passed the Senate, but I could not find that. I will admit that I did not do as much research as I do most months, so I'm sorry if this is a bit of an incomplete list. Today's been a bit of a crazy day, but anyway, so I think it might even be past the committee part of it, but at least as of the 19th, it passed committee. So we'll see what happens now that it's out on the main Senate. And hopefully they vote on it and it get passed and it gets signed and all that good stuff. All right, so now we're jumping over to Ohio, September 19th also. Right to carry reform bill committee vote. Oh, passes committee vote. Sorry. So this one's one of those ones that seems kind of small, but I think it's an important one. So it's a substitute House Bill 142, passed the House Committee on Federalism and Interstate Relations. Okay, that's kind of a weird subcommittee for it to be in, but basically it has to do with notifying a law enforcement officer you're carrying a concealed handgun when you're stopped. Hang on, it said down here somewhere. So the original bill would have removed the requirement completely. So as in you don't have to you don't have to inform an officer that you're carrying. I personally think it's a good tactic too, whether you're required to or not, but that's a personal opinion. And so anytime that you get rid of a law, so it's up to the person, then they can make their own choice what they feel to do. But anyways, that was the original one. The substituted one, it's clarifying the disclosure requirements and gives motorists a clear step to follow when stopped by law enforcement. So basically a licensee must verbally notify once requested to present their driver's license upon being stopped by an officer of law enforcement for law enforcement purposes. Now here's the thing where I think this is kind of important. Michigan also has a duty to inform. And most people would, I've heard a lot of people say, just hand them your concealed carry permit when you hand them your license and insurance and registration, all that stuff. Just hand it to them. That counts as informing them. Then they know you're carrying, and you go from there, however they want to proceed. Michigan actually had a case where a person was stopped. The officer came up to the window, talked to him for a minute, said, "Hey, give me a driver's license." Guy said, "Hey, just so you know, I'm carrying. Here's my permit." Actually, he might have even not said, he might have did the thing where he just handed it. The details are a little blurry now, but anyways, basically it was an initial like, "Hey, how's it going? Do you know why I pulled you over? Blah, blah, blah." And then he told him, somehow he informed him, "I have a concealed carry permit." And a court found that that was not immediate enough. That was not informing the officer soon enough. So basically, according to the court case, pretty much as the cop is walking up to your window, you pretty much have to yell out the window, "Hey, I have a concealed pistol license and I'm carrying," because if you say any words to him first, before you tell him about the license, you haven't informed him. So this way, the fact that it's specifically states in the law, you have to tell them if they ask for your driver's license for purpose of law enforcement. Well, then there you go. Because maybe they pulled you over and said, hey, you know, you got a flat tire? You say, oh, yeah, I'm about to change it right now. Thanks for your help. I got it. And the guy drives away. Technically speaking, under the original law, like you would have had to inform him of that first. Now, if they don't ask for your driver's license, you don't really have to inform them. Anyways, and the other part of it is, if this goes all the way through, as it stands right now, if you don't inform the officer in Ohio, it is a serious misdemeanor, punishable up to 6 months imprisonment and a fine up to $1,000, as well as suspension of your concealed handgun license. The substitute bill would lower the penalty to a minor misdemeanor and eliminates the possibility of suspended license or imprisonment and reduces to a fine not to exceed $25. So you still have a duty to inform. You have to basically, it tells you do it when he says, hey, can I have your driver's license? Then you verbally inform them that you're carrying and you go from there. And if you don't do that, the worst that happens is you get charged with a minor misdemeanor and have to pay a fine of, $25. Which, and here's the thing, I mean, that's, again, it seems kind of small, but think about it. Maybe your brain someplace else. Like maybe he pulled you over for speeding, but you were speeding because you were rushing to the hospital to, go see your mom or whatever. And so the last thing you want to are thinking about is your, concealed carry. And the guy says, hey man, you were speeding, but and you go, oh crap, I'm so sorry. Maybe even let you off on a warning or whatever. And then as as you're putting your wallet away, he sees the gun and hey, how come you didn't tell me about that? Bam, you're thrown in jail for 6 months because you forgot to tell them. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that law-abiding carry holders are not really a threat to officer safety. I know that's why they have the requirement to inform, is they want to make sure the officer is safe and, has all the information needed. But I don't know. Anyways, it's a small step, but I think it's important because, again, like I said, personally, I just tell them. Because that's, I feel more comfortable. I want them to feel comfortable with me, but, and I do in Michigan because I have to, but even if I didn't have to, I probably still would. But that's your own choice. Maybe you think it's better not to do that. Maybe you think it makes it worse when you tell them because now they get nervous because they maybe someone, oh man, this person has a gun. Whereas if you didn't tell them, they just give you your speeding ticket and you go about your day and they're none the wiser and they never get nervous and everything's fine. So I don't know. Anyways, the last thing I got here, see, I told you this was going to be quick, is Rhode Island House gives final approval to gun control bill. So this is do. Where was it? So this was House Bill 5510. And Senate Bill 405. And let's see, it was pushed by anti-gun people, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay. So this was a domestic violence legislation. All right. Sorry, I don't have the summary of the bill right here. So I'm going to basically, okay, this was basically the one where they could take away your guns for just the accusation of domestic violence. You're not even convicted of something or anything. It basically some other states have done this where someone you're married to or living with or a close family member or something like that could basically go into a court and say, hey, this person's a bad guy, and then they come take your guns, and then later you have to prove you're not a bad guy. So it's you're definitely guilty till proven innocent. And so basically, either way though, it did pass. And it's heading to the governor. So it doesn't say, I don't see something that says it was signed yet, though. So, okay, so there we go. Yeah, so the Senate had blunted some of the most glaring problems in the original bill, but the House did not adapt the Senate changes. So the House came back into session this week and passed the amended bill, which means it now heads to the governor. Okay, so anyways, that's a gun domestic violence thing. Like I said, there's been other states that have done that. We've talked about that in the past. But Rhode Island is now the newest one to add the guilty till proven innocent as far as gun ownership goes. And basically that wraps it up. So thanks guys for watching. I'm sorry I didn't look at the chat. I didn't put this in with all the other regular Every Second Matters stuff. This is kind of just a an experiment in a way of this is the legislative update segment. Like I said, feel free to play it on any of your own podcasts or share it with friends or do whatever the heck you want with it. I'm just trying to get everyone on the same page of what happened last month. And thanks for watching. I'll see all you guys next month for Every Second Matters again.